From the KBuenaRadio.tv studios in North York, Ontario, and over the Barn Burner Network, you are listening and watching Candid Frank Live, seen on Mondays at 1 and 3 p.m. respectively, wrapped around our NFL Blitz show. Don't forget the Barn Burner app on iOS or Android. So join us.
I got help here. I got a helper today. Isn't that Andy? Yes. Yes. Use the microphone, friend. Yeah, no, we're here. We're actually ready to go now. I didn't think we'd be ready. Here's the scoop. We're doing Candid Frank Live right now, and we're talking about the Canadian Football League. He's David Morisuti, and I'm Candid Frank. And, the option for us is to have a lot of fun, to talk about the Canadian Football League. But there's some serious stuff going on, David, right now, and it involves... we'll talk about it later. We got talk about the we didn't get a chance to talk about Labor Day Classic. We didn't get a chance to talk about what happened in Moncton to any real serious degree. We have the issue now with Trevor Harris being the second last quarterback to be left standing. And of all quarterbacks, that if you started this year and said 8 of the 9 starters are going to be gone, and the only one standing is going to be Mike Riley.
No, I would not have guessed that in a million years, that's for sure.
I still am amazed by the fact that he's still standing. And I don't want to jinx him, so knock on wood, Mike, stay healthy. We need you to stay healthy. So let's begin by talking about the teams in general. We're making up for a lost week. And that lost week is the Labor Day Classic week. And, of course, this past week, which was the Banjo Bowl was in there, so there was stuff going on that I think is valued to talk about. Generally speaking, the week this week, David, what do you want to talk about this week? What do you think we should talk about?
Well, I mean, the quarterback, what's going on in the West is pretty interesting after, you know, Calgary and Edmonton and Saskatchewan and Winnipeg seem to just be trying to kill each other for top spot in the West. I think right now the West is probably the most intriguing storyline at the moment, considering while Winnipeg has been able to stay atop, I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to. If I think Calgary, they're 4 points behind in the standings. Yeah, I have pulled it up right now. They're 4 points back, 2 wins back of first place, and first off, Shevler has been good enough to keep Winnipeg afloat, but I'm starting to get a little worried that Winnipeg might be in a little bit of trouble with Calgary coming up right behind them.
And the reason they're going to have trouble is simply because, as much as we like to think that the Calgary Stampeders, without Bo Levi Mitchell, is not as good a team, they prove they are.
Yeah.
And now you add Bo Levi Mitchell to the mix. And anybody who doesn't respect the fact that the defending Grey Cup champions, with the MLP back in the lineup, playing a league of backup quarterbacks, that the rest of the teams don't have something to concern themselves with. Now, if you're Winnipeg, on the subject of Winnipeg versus Calgary, Strebler is getting a chance to show what he can do. We have seen quarterbacks at different stages this year. We've seen how Vernon Adams, almost off the get-go, started to impress. We saw Cody Fajardo, after Caleros' injury in Game 1, start to impress. But we've seen the other side of the equation, too.
The worst part of the equation.
Right. And you could put Bethel Thompson in both categories.
Yep.
Because he spent the longest time in the category where we're going, oh boy, the Argos need a quarterback. And every time he played, the Argos need a quarterback soon. To the Argos need a quarterback now. But not just in the last game because they won. He has joined the Vernon Adams conversation for good young, well, good inexperienced or non-number one, achieving number one status. I think he's getting there. I don't think the word elite yet can be...
No.
But his statistics are elite. But the results aren't. That's where he's...
Yeah. At the end of the day, I know there's a lot of people, especially in Ireland, that are pretty happy right now with what they're seeing from the club, Bethel Thompson. And the last few weeks, he's been good enough for the team to win, but at the same time, the team hasn't won. So it's tough to judge the performance just based on a couple weeks. And the thing I always try to remind people, results are big in the CFL. Quarterbacks can put up numbers all they want, but it's all about that win-loss for the CFL. And that's the important part. And while I've been impressed with what I've seen from Bethel Thompson, I just don't understand how it took this long to get there, considering the talent around him hasn't changed. Daryl Walker's still there, SJ Green's still there.
I'm going to disagree a little bit, just a tiny bit.
Okay.
You're right. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is 100% right. The immediate people surrounding him,
yeah,
and the people he wants to throw the ball to,
correct,
it's the same cast. But even within that group, there has been, you know, the guy that sits at the TSN desk. No, wait, that's not that guy. That's the same name. But you know, Rodney Smith, right, has proven to improve. And in the subject matter that we're talking about right now, just so we don't lose you, he's David Morosutti. I'm Candid Frank. And let us bring in the other two guys we have in this conversation. One is Jared Bapty, and the other is Michael Townsend. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Frank. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, but I'm going to have to. The technical difficulties that I've created are immense. anyway, Mike, go ahead. You should be okay now. We weren't hearing you well enough.
Okay, no. I just have to listen to what you guys are talking about, and I do agree with some of the statements that you made, Frank, especially about the Calgary Stampeders being a better team with Bo Levi Mitchell coming back, and I'm pretty sure you know I was going to harp on this one.
I am positive. Jared, what do you think? Your first comments on what we're talking about.
Well, it's very interesting, the results angle that we're going with, because you look at the top three quarterbacks in yardage in the CFL, and they have a combined 9 wins between the three of them.
Oof.
And Trevor Harris has 6 of those 9 wins, because he's with the Edmonton Eskimos, who are a slightly better team than the Toronto Argonauts and the BC Lions, right? But it's just exactly that. These guys are doing everything they possibly can and still not getting it done. I mean, Mike Riley and McCall Bethel Thompson have 22 interceptions between the two of them, and it's split evenly. So 22 divided by 2 is 11.
And he went to school. Isn't that nice? Go ahead.
But it's about, like we were saying, the guys around these three quarterbacks just aren't, well, maybe, you know, I certainly think around Bethel Thompson and Mike Riley, the guys around them aren't really getting it done for their quarterbacks. But Trevor Harris, I almost argue that he's, because the Eskimos have had so much difficulty in the red zone, that it's, for whatever reason, it's Trevor Harris who's struggling.
But can we just for now stay on the topic, which is basically talking about the transition from starters to backups? To take what you're saying, and I'll say this: Logan Kilgore. What are your views on him as a solution to a long-term injury? Well, we have an upper body injury. We saw Trevor Harris basically trying to use his hand or his lower arm. It didn't look like a shoulder issue. It looked more like a hand issue. Now, this is all supposition or surmising on my part.
Speculation
even better. Logan Kilgore, 9 for 9 his first tosses. He's a guy that has been in the kind of system that he's in now here in Toronto.
Yep.
He threw, I think, 4 or 5 interceptions one game.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty.
It wasn't pretty at all. So, you know, this is a guy who doesn't exactly have a history to help Edmonton, as Arbuckle did with Calgary, as, you know, Hamilton, help me out.
Dana
Evans. Thank you. You know what Dana Evans has done, and in fairness too, you know, in Montreal the same thing, because their starter went down as well. So the subject that here, what I'd like to address is, do we consider this an opportunity and is it turned into an opportunity where we're getting to see some really good quarterbacks get an opportunity and open up? You know, because when free agency kicks around, it was a merry-go-round with very few seats.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying right now, the big question I'm asking is, are there a lot more seats now, in your opinions, David?
Going into the offseason?
Yeah.
I can think of two right off the top of my head. That's Toronto and Ottawa right now, depending on how the season ends. Hamilton, potentially, depending on what happens with Mazzoli there. Other than that, I mean, the West is...
Hey, that's not what I mean. What I'm saying is, well, see, David and Jared, Mike and I go back 8 years. And this is Mike will understand the question. And
I'll should have asked Michael first.
The question, gentlemen, is this. Every year, teams need a quarterback. There hasn't seemed, and I think this year, more than any other year, there seems to be, Mike, we've had this conversation over and over, and we talked about people like Fajardo that I said could be a starter. You said Vernon Adams. It's turning out it's true that these guys are available. Do you think now we have more quarterbacks than we had before, which means there'll be more to go around and we won't have a team that is forced to use a guy that they can't have faith in as a number one? So in other words, the merry-go-round seats where the quarterbacks sit, will there be more, in your opinion, Mike, are there more seats now in that merry-go-round than there was this offseason, not just who was available, but actual quarterbacks were considered number ones on their team?
Oh, yes, of course, Frank. I mean, and you know, when you got these starters that's going down and you were able to bring these guys off the bench to come in and play, and they're playing well, I mean, you're getting a good quarterback. Like Kilgore. It took him a while to get to the CFL and learn the CFL game, because he was in Toronto, he kind of struggled. But it took time for him to learn the CFL game, and you see what he did in the loss against Calgary Stampeders. His numbers wasn't bad. 28, 242 yards, one interception, no touchdowns. He's getting there. So the backup quarterback round is basically more as important as the starter right now.
Yeah,
and a lot of guys going down.
So, Jared, we've seen an opportunity for backup quarterbacks to step in the breach, to end up under center. You've seen it in the team you cover with Zane Evans. You've seen it happen. Do you see, from your perspective, more seats on the merry-go-round for options for teams who may not have a number one quarterback, who may not have a healthy quarterback? Do you see more availability now? Have we seen a larger pool of great quarterbacks in the Canadian Football League?
I think at least, maybe not in some coaches' eyes, but I think there's certainly more of an opportunity to have like a 1A and a 1B quarterback instead of a starter and a backup. Like, maybe because we're seeing so many starters going down in this day and age, maybe you sit your starter a few times. Like, we start to see the formidable load management come into play in the CFL as well, where some starters, you know, guys like Trevor Harris and Bo Levi Mitchell and Mike Riley, they maybe take a few games off, and then the 1B quarterback gets to start more games versus, like we've seen so much in the traditional sense, you have your starting quarterback and your backup. And, you know, maybe the more traditional coaches might not take this approach, but I think this season provides an opportunity for maybe some younger or more experimental coaches to go in a direction like that.
Well, one thing I will say that you bring up, Jared, the only thing is there's quarterbacks like Trevor Harris, Mike Riley, and Bo Levi Mitchell that probably... If they're healthy,
take the ball.
If they're healthy, they're gonna want to start.
We saw that.
That is the problem.
With Levi during his injury,
yeah.
You know, he wanted to come back sooner.
Yeah, but the thing I think another point you bring up though is I think teams need to do a better job. I think now they're gonna start realizing their backup quarterbacks need to be more prepared than in past. Like I think you look back at I'm going to bring the Argos in because I've seen this for years. Always relying on Ricky Ray, and then when Ricky Ray went down, and unfortunately many people thought it was more of a matter of when, not if.
Oh, absolutely.
And the Argos were a train wreck when that happened because they did not put enough faith in their backup because we have Ricky. We don't really need to worry too much about our backup.
So what you're saying, and what I'm hearing, and I agree 100%, and Jared, you're right as well. And I know Michael agreed with this, and I hate to have a situation where four people agree because that doesn't make great television. Sorry, I apologize. But the fact is, without the experience, these backup quarterbacks are not going to be able to carry the load.
No.
So what we've had, and in this case, and I agree with Jared and you as well, that these backups, teams have to now consider the bigger picture, which is a season of quarterbacks with experience, rather than less. And that's why I think that's been changing. And Mike, you know, we've seen this coming down the road for the past 8 years that we've been doing the show, that we've seen the necessity for quarterbacks to be supported by a backup quarterback who's ready and able. And the Kevin Glenn thing, where you're not looking for a quarterback who's going to, you hope, but what you're, at the very least, you're hoping for is that you have a quarterback in, like a Kevin Glenn, who keeps the team on an even keel, maybe not beating everybody silly, but not being beat silly. An average, a guy who keeps the record near 500.
Oh, of course, Frank, and you just took the words right out of my mouth. You need that backup quarterback that's going to keep you 500. Now, if he can keep you above 500 or better, that's a plus. But you need at least that backup, man, that can give you some splits until your starter comes back. I mean, and right now the backup quarterback, that's what they're doing. They're giving chances for these guys to heal up, and they're giving these teams splits to keep them, at 500 where they can make the playoffs. So, the backup quarterback is very important. You need him.
Arbuckle?
You need him.
Arbuckle's a perfect example.
Yeah. I mean, Calgary wouldn't be in the position they are now if Arbuckle wasn't at least better prepared for it, too.
And Streller needs to be that example.
Yeah, I mean, but I think Scheffler, he's been, they've kept him pretty close to Nichols in terms of usage and practice. And everyone in Winnipeg thought he was getting closer to being the starter this year. So that shows that, Winnipeg at least was conscious of this. I think Saskatchewan, I'm not going to say they got kind of lucky with Fajardo, but it could have gone worse considering, he doesn't have a lot of experience, but he was given the confidence to know that he was the guy, and he's taken the ball and he's run with it. I think if you look at the teams that have struggled with it in Ottawa and Toronto, when it comes to their quarterbacks, they're the case of what can go wrong in this type of situation.
They all have a contribution to make, and by all, I mean the offensive line, the offensive coordinator, the head coach, the player themselves. There's a symbiotic thing that goes on. Football's the ultimate team sport, okay? We all know that. If you're a football fan, whether you're an NFL football fan or a CFL football fan, you understand the concept, and we all live by the same belief. It's a team game. And a quarterback only is as good as the rest of the team around him. You mentioned about the receivers. I talked about the offensive line and maybe the running game. That doesn't work. So when we bring in a young quarterback, the hope is that young quarterback is ingrained in the system that works for him. The trap guys, and I'll ask you this, is there a trap where you have a guy, for example, like Nichols, who's more of a drop-back passer, and then Streveler? Is it difficult as an offensive coordinator? Do you think it's a big challenge to have two quarterbacks of that kind of diverse ability and strengths?
I think when you look at, there are a lot of teams that have those two different dynamics. I think they want those different dynamics for this reason.
Is there a plan, and does the plan have the ability to be flexible?
I think it does. I think there's a lot of things, we look at Streveler, the thing that Winnipeg has done is they decide, okay, your main strength is running, we're going to play to that strength. That's what playbooks are so large that most of them don't even get used during the game for this very reason. They have plays for the different things they want to do, for the different defenses they're going to see. So I think that teams have at least been more conscious in knowing that we have to be better prepared in these situations. And so when you look at Winnipeg, Nichols, yeah, he's more of a drop back passer, but he's not doing anything too crazy in that, you know, you have to go outside of the box to work with him. Strebler, it's different. You have to go a little more outside of the box. So maybe your offensive coordinator needs to make plays that fit him a little bit more. But with Nichols, you don't have to worry too much about changing the playbook that much, if that makes any sense. I think Strebler, they've better prepared for him because they've had him for the last couple of years.
Yeah, I guess the question I'm asking is are we getting to the point where a few years ago I noted we needed a 1 and a 1A, right? Is it possible now we're ending up with a 1, a 1A, and a 1B too? I mean, you know, I don't want to muddy the waters here, but Jared, how do you feel about having a game plan with two different kinds of quarterbacks? Because in Hamilton, the team that you cover, I would suggest that the two quarterbacks aren't that much different. Mind you, Mazzoli's a much stronger physically player, but they both do basically the same thing. Could Hamilton's offense change gears like I'm suggesting? Is that a good thing, or the way they're going about it is better?
Well, in a way, yes. I mean, I would say that Mazzoli's arm is certainly a lot stronger than Dane's, but I mean, Dane has really come into his own since he took over, right? And that's kind of, you know, the situation that Kilgore's in is unfortunate that it's so late in the season. He's not going to have time to come into his own in a way. But as far as the teams playing differently, I think that's just what you have to do. I mean, as an offensive coordinator, you have to tailor your offense to the quarterback that you have, and whether or not that's a running or a throwing quarterback. I mean, if for example the Hamilton Tiger Cats had Mike Riley, for whatever reason, he's much more of a throwing quarterback, right? So they would need to completely refocus their offense, and that might mean that some of their receivers might not be as useful as others, or their offensive line might have to completely refigure or readjust how they block, right? And that's an issue that BC has, is the offensive line's inability to block well enough for Mike Riley to get a pass off.
So we agree then it can be an issue if you have to have two different types of quarterbacks and accommodate their strengths or protect their weaknesses.
Oh, for sure. If you go from a throwing quarterback, I think the opposite might be more difficult. If you go from an active and running quarterback to a sit in the pocket and throw quarterback, then your offensive line is completely thrown off because they're used to a quarterback being mobile and running. And so, you know, maybe their blocking doesn't need to be as strong, or they don't need to block as tightly or whatever. Whereas with a throwing quarterback, yes, you need to be able to hold the pocket open long enough for somebody like Mike Riley to get a pass away.
Mike?
Yeah, Frank, having two quarterbacks like that, my thing is you probably have to have two playbooks, because, like, for Mazzoli, for instance, and Dane Evans, like he just said, Mazzoli has a stronger arm than Dane Evans, and Dane Evans is coming to his own, so therefore, the way Dane Evans throws the ball in plays is going to be different from Mazzoli. So you have to have two different type of playbooks, and I think that's what they're doing to make Dane Evans successful in Hamilton. Now, when you switch over here to...
I think we just lost Mike.
Harris has a stronger arm, but Kilgore, he has an arm, but it's not like Trevor Harrison. So you have to make a playbook that's going to fit that 1A quarterback. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess to take, for those of you, because we do from time to time have people who are watching this show and other CFL shows, and I always wanted, and in my position, to help people who aren't that knowledgeable about the game. So just to get people up to speed, the CFL has had issues with quarterbacks staying healthy all year. This year we've had a situation where every quarterback except the guy who's been pummeled the most in the pocket, outside the pocket, I'm worried he's even getting nailed in the parking lot, Mike Riley, and he's the only one left standing. So now this has been going on for years, so we've been trying as hard as we can as a league, and I'll consider myself a fan trying to figure out how to resolve this issue. Of these other quarterbacks that come in, now you've got to deal with how do you integrate these quarterbacks. And there are issues because different quarterbacks have different strengths and weaknesses. So I guess what I'm getting at here is the final question on this subject, to review it, are we okay the way it is, or do you see a deep sense of change that has to come from the organization where they have to concentrate more on being flexible as far as their coaching is concerned, looking for not only now a number two, because you know now a number two is going to come in, a number three. So where are we as far as put your manager's hat, general manager's hat on, guys, and how do you go into the off season thinking quarterback? Knowing what you know now, what are the changes, and what do you see yourself needing to do?
Well, first and foremost, protection is key. I think you have to at least, you can't just think about the quarterback too. You also have to think how you're going to protect them. So whether that's an offensive line, if that's a running game, need to be better. I mean, that's first and foremost. Because it doesn't matter who you get a quarterback. If you can't protect them, it's not going to mean much. And then secondly, when you look at the quarterback market, if quarterbacks, especially backups, know that they're going to be more, you know, used more, or there's a better chance of them playing, that also means a better chance to get paid more, right? So unless teams are willing to go with younger quarterbacks that don't cost as much, they're going to have to really figure out the salary cap structure to fit in two quarterbacks like that too. That's what general managers are going to have to figure out, because you know, let's say the Argos want to bring back McLeod Bethel Thompson, and then they also want to have Zach Caleros, who we know that they want to keep. That's not going to be cheap, because McLeod Bethel Thompson will have the stats to say, I deserve a raise of what I've been making. And Zach Caleros, I don't think he's exactly going to be taking too much of a discount. I think he'll take less to play in Toronto.
Incentives. It'll be incentives.
Yeah.
The contract has to be incentivized.
So that's the thing. You have in the south, and again, even those things count towards the cap too. So teams still have to figure out how are we going to make the salary cap work. Does that mean that we go cheap on other areas like the receivers? Like something will have to change.
Or to clarify it in a different way as well. Just think of, you have a piggy bank with X amount of money.
Yeah.
Now you got to take money out for players. Now the incentivized player, in other words, the player that's working off a bonus, that bonus, you're basically saying, now what do I do if that guy reaches that bonus?
Yeah.
Now you've got, you don't have the money, so what do you do? Well, then what happens is, as an example, you have to let go of a guy with a contract that can compensate you for that.
Exactly.
That
before salary. It gets guaranteed.
Yeah, so that the general manager has, that's the challenge. Jared, from your perspective, put your general manager's hat. You're looking at the landscape when it comes to quarterbacks in the Canadian Football League. What are you thinking?
Well, if I'm managing a team like the Toronto Argonauts, let's say, who's, you know, rebuilding, I'm almost looking at an ideal situation where I effectively have two quarterbacks that have proven, like two, I bring in two backups that have proven enough to be able to carry a CFL team in a season like this one that we've had. And then basically have them duel it out to be the starter. Now, I know the Argonauts have kind of been doing that already with James Franklin and McLeod Bethel Thompson, but realistically, neither of those guys had really proved themselves.
No.
So I'd be looking at bringing in, you know, for example, if somebody like Nick Arbuckle and or Dane Evans, let's say those two guys are available. If I can bring the two of them in on maybe reduced salaries, but with incentives like we're talking about, and go, all right, here's what I need you guys to do. Whoever comes out as the winner will be the starter, and then, you know, you either look at, okay, maybe this person go the backup guy either has to be okay with being a backup, or you find a trade for him to get more of a backup because that other guy is trying to be a starter somewhere else.
And as yes, and you're under, and that's the perfect thing that you just said, because that's where I believe James Franklin is. He is not going to wear the A next year. I don't think he has any interest in being a Toronto Argonaut next year. That die has been cast. So now you have Bethel Thompson and you have Caleros, and you have a couple of young guys. You don't want to give up on. O'Connor is a guy, a Canadian, but he's the next Canadian that people may find out, or it may become part of the conversation will he be the next? You know, he might end up strapping on the Canadian flag.
I also think it's no coincidence that the Argos brought in the quarterback's coach either. I don't think it was just to work with the starter. I also think it was to work with the younger guys too.
Absolutely.
So I think that was a valuable. I know Pop wanted to do it earlier, but the coaching cap, which we all hate, prevented him from doing it earlier. He had to make a tough decision to let someone else go in order to get Crompton to come in. But I like that idea of you have this young guy that you want to bring up and mentor up, groom him, and have him ready to go when the time comes. But you also have other guys that you know can start, or at least provide you, you know, enough if they were to be thrown out there.
Mike, this will be on your resume, so put on your GM's hat. How do you look? And you can be general. You don't have to speak about any team. But generally speaking, knowing what you know about injuries, knowing what you know about the need for backups, knowing what you know about how important the offensive line is concerned, all that stuff. If you're a GM right now, how does it change? How does thinking quarterback change because of what we've witnessed this year that every GM has seen? Whether it's happened to them or not, they're now aware more than ever.
Yeah, Frank, me putting my GM hat on, I'm going to have three good quarterbacks. And, you know, my third-string quarterback is going to have to be half his pay, going to have to be a incentive base. Because if your second string go down, you're going to need that third-string guy to come in to try to keep you at 500 to when your guys come back. And you got to actually do something better with the offensive line. You know, I think with the GM, they need to spend some of their money on that offensive line to keep their quarterbacks healthy.
Yeah,
that's the first thing I want to do.
Yeah, what's the second?
You got to keep your quarterback healthy, so you need to focus on that offensive line.
Okay, that leads you perfect lead in. This is something that I've been, this little pea brain over here has been thinking about this, and I'm a proud Canadian. Anybody who knows me knows I wave the flag at every opportunity. I'm a proud Canadian. I'm proud of our Canadian Football League players and our Canadian players in the league. But now I'm going to be counterintuitive. Here comes the question, and this one's a tough one, guys, to answer. I believe it is. Is the problem with the quarterbacks going down directly related to the fact that if one can say, generally speaking, U.S. trained players are better than Canadian trained players, and even a step further, are U.S. players better football players? Are there more better offensive linemen that they're not using in the Canadian Football League because of that cap, and they're being forced to use Canadian linemen, offensive linemen, and is that part of the problem? It's a tough question, guys. I mean, you could really step in it here, so enjoy, Mike. I mean, sorry, David. Enjoy, David.
I think the techniques that they should, and the amount of time they spend teaching those techniques in the States might be different here in Canada. I mean, we've got quite a few great Canadian offensive linemen, but the problem is I think those ones have become more valuable than any other position. And they're getting paid like it, too. I look at Winnipeg and their offensive line. That's probably the best one in the league. If we are talking about the ratio and how that impacts teams' decisions, you look at the Argos, they start, I think, four Canadian offensive linemen, if I'm not wrong. Four of their starting offensive linemen are Canadian, and they've had issues not only keeping the quarterback healthy, also keep issues protecting the quarterback and giving the quarterback enough time to throw. So I think, you know,
because there's talk, you know, there's talk that they want to shrink the Canadian content. And I'm just wondering, Jared, is that possibly a motivation? Is where, you know, there are players playing in the Canadian Football League, and I, like I said, kill me for saying this, but I you know, shoot the messenger if you like, but if the talent pool for offensive linemen in the Canadian side is much weaker than the American side, then are you not creating a vulnerability and one that shows up in injuries to quarterbacks, or am I overstating it?
Well, it is almost an unfortunate reality, but I think you're speaking the truth. I've actually went through all of the rosters and checked, and there's an average of two American offensive linemen on every team, sometimes three, and sometimes even just one. And I think this is a training issue more than anything. I think maybe Canadian universities need to take a look at how they are developing Canadian offensive linemen, because this is how it's been, and how, I mean, it may or may not continue, as you're saying, with the possibility of them shrinking the quota. But this is how it's been, where the Canadian content has often been put on the offensive line to equal out that ratio. So I think, really, Canadian universities need to step up their training, in my opinion, because these American quarterbacks, most of the time, are coming in to the CFL expecting to have good protection, and for a lot of teams, it's just not there.
Well, and you also look at, when I'm at practice, how much work the offensive line coach is putting with the offensive line, because for a lot of these guys, they haven't had the proper coaching. I think you're right about that, Jared, because in the States, let's be honest here, the coaching is better because, you know, the guys that want the jobs want to be in the States, the good ones too. The Argos have had, I don't know how many different offensive line coaches over the years.
One of them just sprung free again, true.
Yeah, so, you know, the continuity is tough too. You want to have continuity with your offensive line and your coach. But they spend so much time trying to, and the problem is too, in practice, it's not padded practice. They're not getting the realistic reps that guys in the States are getting. Guys in the States, like if you watch football practices in the States, there's a reason why there's more injuries at practices in the States than there is up here. They're tougher practices, they're physical practices, so that means guys are more prepared for game action. I understand why the CFL did the, and the players asked for this too, but there's a, you know, you give and take, that's one of the downfalls, is your offensive line does not get the proper reps, proper preparation to deal with the rushes, the blitzes, the different things that can come at them, because players are letting up in practice.
So that's part of it too. Mike, your opinion on the offensive line and how important is it? Is it maybe a bit of a handicap because they gravitate to having Canadian offensive linemen, and the talent difference is a lot or not?
Yeah, Frank, it's lopsided for the simple fact is when you look at an offensive lineman that went to Canadian school versus a Canadian offensive lineman that went to an American college, you can see the difference in the way they play, the way they train, how big they are. But we got to understand something, man. From Division I all the way down to Division III college football in the States, these colleges put millions into their training facilities. You know, the NCAA, I mean, all this TV revenue helps put these big million-dollar training facilities at these colleges where in the CIS, and I might be wrong, but I don't think they get these million-dollar cash value training facilities to train their offensive linemen up.
Only a couple.
It's all
do.
About. What'd you say, Frank?
No, that was David, and he said only a couple do. A couple do, not many.
Yeah, okay, a couple, and you can tell the difference. Now, if they were to put more money into their training facilities and train these guys the way they train the States, you have better offensive line. It is a handicap.
Now, I'm gonna make my comment about being the GM in the offensive line here, and as a GM, I personally think you have to pay attention as a general manager of a Canadian Football League team right now, is you really have to work really hard to make sure that your offensive line is as good as it can be, understanding the challenges of the cap, understanding that you know, you're going to have to make a decision about having enough money to pay a defensive lineman, a rush defensive lineman, or an interior lineman that you need, whether it be on offense or defense. As a general manager, I would be having to make sure, I think my first and foremost plan is to make sure I have two guys that can be quarterbacks in the Canadian Football League. And then the third one would be someone, which would be probably with the fourth, your third and fourth would be guys that would either be on the practice roster or a number three quarterback, that, as David said, make sure you have the coaches that are there to help the players be successful. We've heard with each successful backup quarterback, you listen to the experts, and they all say the same thing. This guy is good because of his offensive line and his offensive coordinator. The offensive coordinator and the quarterback have a relationship, one that needs to be 100% understood. And by understood, I mean the quarterback has to be able to execute what the offensive coordinator is saying. What we saw earlier with the Toronto Argonauts, we saw a change where their offensive coordinator was on the field, then he went up in the stands, and ever since he's gone up in the stands, the quarterback's played better. You know, there's all these little things that a general manager has to decide to do. And again, it all is in the backdrop of the cap. And now this year, the new cap, which is the management cap, makes my job as the general manager even harder, because now mistakes that were made either by me or someone else, we're still paying for them. And that's the new challenge as well that you have, that you highlighted, David. So as far as I'm concerned, Canadian athletes are as good as any in the world. I cannot say that hard enough, especially after what happened a few days ago.
Yeah.
Right? So we know, and we know that Canadian teams can muster championship caliber on the international stage. Toronto Raptors. So this isn't me saying that we're inferior. What I'm saying is getting in touch with the reality that maybe, if there's quarterbacks going down, is there a reason? If there's a reason, that's all this discussion is about and was about. If there's a reason why the quarterbacks are going down, then we need to look at that issue and ensure that we do something about it. But none of that is guaranteed right now. We all put on a GM hat for a second, but what it's up to is those GMs who actually are getting paid by the teams to be the GMs. So in review, I guess, I'll give you a chance to summarize what we just discussed as far as GMs and as far as offensive line. In a summary, David, what would you say that we should be reminded of, and boil it down for us?
Well, for one, you have to either, if you're going to put Canadians in a position to get more chances, your Canadians need to be good enough to earn that opportunity, first and foremost. And maybe the people that are not getting the chances, because let's also not forget the global or the international roster spot.
The global players.
The global players. That also eats up another potential American being on the roster too. I mean, that's something the league has to really think about, is do you want to worry about the global expansion that Randy and Rosie's working for, or do you want to worry about your teams having the best product on the field? I think that's the big thing for the league.
That is an excellent point, and we didn't touch on that one. You're right. The league has to figure out how to keep the quarterbacks healthy, too.
Yeah.
It's up to them as well. Bernardo, we can go for our first break. We had a real slow start today. I apologize to you folks. I'll tell you, it's going to be a really interesting segment after this. We're going to talk about the Western and Eastern divisions and where they stand individually as teams when Bernardo sends us off and we come back.
You're at the KBuenaRadio.tv studios in North York.
You know, in the Canadian Football League, we have 12 guys instead of 11. What do you think? An extra man out there?
Of course. They all look good in their pants.
Ooh, can I take him home? I think you can never have too many men in tight pants on a football field.
And we have unlimited motion in our backfield.
Wow.
Wow.
You know?
The whole new realm of possibilities, huh?
And they're ready to go again in 20 seconds.
Where is this again?
That's interesting.
I may have to rest up a little. CFL, I gotta watch it. Go Canada.
Why do you think it takes you guys four downs to get 10 yards? We only need three up there.
Because we always make mistakes.
Oh, we're just kind of slow, you know, laid back. Got to get an extra down in before we can get our 10 yards.
You know, they give us one just in case. I love four downs. First down, second down, third down, you know, fourth down.
You're saying you're better than us.
They want the game to go slower, I guess, for the commercials.
Y'all are obviously better. Must be the long winters, maybe.
They have longer legs. Are they faster? Is there...
Welcome back. I'm Candid Frank. He's David Morisuti. On the telephones, we have Jared Baptee and Mike Townsend. Mike is an American, and he loves our Canadian game, has loved it. We've done shows together for 8 years. A great fan of the Canadian game, and of course, this show is a big fan of the Canadian game. And to describe David, David writes for Sportsnet, and he writes now... Congratulations! They're putting your name under the article. You're swapping out staff writer for David Morisuti. Congratulations, buddy!
Thank you very much. It's a lot of work, though. You can't just, if you're putting your name on it, you put the work behind it too. Yeah, it's been a busy while, busy couple weeks. A lot of sleepless nights too.
Thank goodness you don't have to decide the font.
No. I think. But I do decide the picture that goes there too, though.
Yeah, well, you know, that's something his mother's very proud of. Probably only his mother, just like my mother when it comes to my picture. We also have Jared Baptee. Jared Baptee is an up-and-comer. He graduated media school. And Jared, what are your aims?
Well, I'm currently the PA announcer for two hockey teams now, both the Burlington Cougars of the Ontario Junior Hockey League and the Burlington Barracudas of the Provincial Women's Hockey League, which are basically the equivalent. So the OJHL and the PWHL, kind of the same level of playing for both men's and women's hockey, which is pretty fun. But I love play-by-play, and that's where I want to go.
Okay, and Mike, other than being a truck driver...
Oh, I think we still lost Mike.
We lost Mike? Oh, okay. I don't know what we did to lose him. Anyway, okay. And I am a senior citizen. I don't come with a walker. I don't need a walker. I used to be on Rogers in the late 70s to the early 2000s. I had a large say in what was happening in the greater Toronto area in sports. There was no Sportsnet. There was no TSN. I had the pleasure of working with Steve Spice. We have his picture on the screen in the corner. He passed away at a very young age. It's been almost 20 years now that he's been gone. And I've always been grateful to what he did and the opportunities that he gave me. And for these folks, these two young men, Jared and David, won't like what they're going to hear right now, but Jared, this is what happened to me. I was doing radio on cable on Rogers, and the producer of TV producer convinced his boss that they should do sports. So he was doing the North York Rangers, which is provincial junior A, so it's one level below OHL. I think it's called the OHL now, because the other league, major junior, is now whatever. So anyway, so he sticks his head in the booth, just like we have right here. He sticks his head. It wasn't TV, it was just radio. He says, "Hey, Frank, can you do play-by-play of hockey?" Because he heard me talking about hockey. And I said, "Well, I've never done it, but I, being the fool that I am, I never say no." And, you know, in this business, as you both are going to learn, if you don't know it now, and I'm talking to you two directly, Jared and David, you never say no. You always say, "Yes, I can do it." And hope to heck that you can accomplish what you are there set out to do. So I go there thinking he's going to show me how this is done. They set up the mics, the tables. Says, "Okay, we're on the air." That's it. And that's how it began. And it got so good for me, and I'm so grateful to, because of Steve Spice. They did a full page story on me in the TV Guide and the Star. So I had an opportunity to live kind of the life that you guys want to live. And I love and respect the fact that it's going to be a challenge. And part of the reason why we do this programming, and I'm referring to Joe Pesich and I, what we're trying to do here is to create an opportunity for media types or wannabe media types to come in a format that feels real, feels like you can actually show what you can do. So we're like, Mike's not here, we're like arena football. It, basically, you want to get film so that you can show it to a GM in the Canadian Football League and show them that, look, in prime time, look what I can do. So we try to do that here with, of course, the great network that we're in here, KBuenaRadio.tv. They offered us this opportunity to be on the air, and we're trying to use it best we can. It's a Spanish language station. They welcomed us in here. We have programming from Monday to Thursday. We have people who have little or no experience, but are in the industry already looking for an opportunity. So that's my shameless plug for Barn Burner, the Barn Burner Network, radio, newspapers. We got all that stuff. And it's fun to do it, and it's fun to include everybody. So that's my plug for this. And now let's go shift gears. Let's start with the Western Division. Jared, I'm going to give you the first ball. And as far as the West Division, we can start by just talking about the teams. But first, the Labor Day Classics. Did they live up to your expectations for the East and West? Did they live up to your expectation?
I think certainly the first two did. First of all, the Winnipeg-Saskatchewan game was sensational, and then I think the Hamilton-Toronto game was just as, you know, a grueling rivalry, I think, has I would say maybe it's been rekindled. I know we kind of talked about it a little bit ourselves on our CFL No Yards show with Barn Burner, that, you know, it's not as much of a rivalry in general when one team's really good and the other team isn't. But I think that specific game, there was so much emotion that, I mean, we discussed it. There was just so much emotion
everywhere
on the field, in the stands, and it certainly lived up to the hype that Labor Day always has, especially in Hamilton. I think the only game that didn't live up to it as much was Calgary-Edmonton, where it's, you know, the Battle of Alberta, there's always so much emotion and expectation on a game like that, and Edmonton didn't really live up to that, and really didn't live up to it 2 weeks in a row now, because of the rematch that we had this past Saturday. And that would be my comment. Otherwise, the other two games were awesome, and so was the rematch of the, you know, the Banjo Bowl rematch as well for Winnipeg, Saskatchewan. Not as close of a game, but still just as fun.
What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, what makes these games special is the atmosphere, right? The atmosphere in Saskatchewan was
palpable. It definitely was.
I mean, we know Saskatchewan always brings it when it comes to the atmosphere. Hamilton, too. I think that's first and foremost what makes these games special, because the fans know how special it is. The players can play the same way, but it's the fans that bring it to a different level, I think. That's why I think, Jared, you're right in that those two games, the Calgary-Edmonton crowds weren't exactly, it didn't bring what I think the Hamilton crowd or the Saskatchewan crowd did, unfortunately. And that's not to say the Calgary crowd wasn't good, it just wasn't, the emotion was
you're just you're just comparing the level,
just a level comparison.
The level that spilled over that you could see and feel.
And it impacted the players on the field, too. You know, guys, you know, especially the Toronto game with that scrum that ensued after with Simone Lawrence and James Wilder Jr. going at it. Because you know those two don't like each other.
Absolutely.
And you know there's a lot of guys on Hamilton that used to play in Toronto. And, you know, there's some frustrations maybe when, you know, when they were playing with each other, practicing with each other. Now you get a chance to get right into each other's faces, like, you know, Dylan Wynn, Chris Van Zyl, Justin Tuggle, guys like that that used to play in Braylon Addison. I know he was just on the practice roster, but these are guys who had something to prove to their old team as well. So I think that's what makes Labor Day just so special. I wish I could have gone. I couldn't go because of being in the office, but watching it, you know, when you're watching it, you can see how incredible that atmosphere was, and you appreciate it more because that's what makes Labor Day just so different.
Yeah, absolutely. And from my perspective, I have to say that the Prairie Dog Battle didn't disappoint in regards to how the game was played, the emotion. I agree with you guys. It was pretty intense, and so was the Banjo Bowl. It wasn't a disappointment. Guaranteed, it was fun to watch. I do agree that the Edmonton Calgary one, the Old Patch Battle, didn't rise up as much. But that's from the perspective of I was at the Hamilton Toronto game, so I was really in there, and I could really feel. And then I watched it on TV, and it still had the same kind of feeling. As far as Calgary and Edmonton, I think it's more about how intense the other ones were and are. Right? Mm-hmm. Because with Toronto and Hamilton, doesn't matter. I disagree a little bit, Jared. It doesn't matter it doesn't matter who's 1-9 and who's 9-1 when those two teams meet. They just hate each other. And that hate maybe rises a little deeper with the different players. I mean, I listed here and coaches that have gone from last year to being Argos to being Ticats this year. There's a whole bunch of them. So, you know, it's not just a question of an individual. It's not just a question of old-fashioned Hamilton Tiger Cat 8 of Argo fans or Argo, the Argo team. There also is that really deep-rooted, and the guys that have gone to Hamilton are leaders. They're middle linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
We look at Van Zyl, what kind of leader he is.
Yeah.
You know? These aren't, you know, the weakest contribution to Hamilton that came from Toronto is Coombs. But everybody else is just like, they're a key factor. Who's their best defensive lineman?
Dylan Wynn.
Ex-Argo. So the emotion on the field was as palpable because of those personal relationships. And we've seen it, and in football, almost more than any other sport. In hockey, you see it too. When two brothers are playing on the same ice, they end up killing each other. And just imagine players that you, as you pointed out quite rightly, they practice together. They get in the grind.
Some are roommates.
And some are roommates. And that intense level is ratcheted because of all that. It's fantastic. And it was a wonderful, as always, the Labor Day Classics never disappoint. It's been some, I guess, 40 years now they've been doing it or something, or 25, I don't even know the number anymore.
No, it's been since the 50s.
Has it? Yeah. Okay, I'm pretty sure it was that case. And we've seen, you know, different teams have taken it to a different level at a different time, you know, and they're natural rivalries. And another subject for another day, we won't talk about it now, is the unbalanced schedule. And that unbalanced schedule we'll talk about later. Just quickly to tease you folks, think about an unbalanced schedule where most of the Western teams play most of the Western teams, most of the Eastern teams play, all the Western teams play the Western teams more than they do the East, and the East the same thing in reverse. Can you imagine an extra game against Hamilton if you're an Argo fan? Can you imagine an extra game against Winnipeg?
If you're a Saskatchewan fan?
Yeah. Or Calgary and Edmonton? So we just got to get, Montreal, BC, and I already got those figured out anyway. I think what we should have is that they should have a Labor Day Classic between BC and Nova Scotia, Halifax.
Yeah, and somebody else brought that up too.
And Ottawa and Montreal would be a match of the Quebec Bowl. You know, they just need to foster it. They just need to, all we got to do is put those players on the field and say, we want to know which two of you is better today. Because mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to with the Labor Day Classic. It's about who's better today. And so we can talk about the unbalanced schedule later, but that creeped into my mind because of the Labor Day Classic. So we're happy with the Labor Day Classics. Mike, did you come back or are you still gone? He's still gone. So it was a success. 2 out of 3 ain't bad, Jared, I guess by your definition, right?
Yeah, I think so.
2 out of 3 ain't bad. It was a song about it, so it must be true. Okay, Bernardo, let's take another break. Let's take our second break. We appreciate your patience, folks. It's been a very interesting afternoon. We hope you've enjoyed the program thus far. Again, you're watching Candid Frank Live on the Barn Burner Network. We hope you enjoy it. You can check us out on video. You can check us out on radio. And you can even read our articles. See it, hear it, live it. And I forgot one, right, Joe? Thank you.
the lines of scrimmage in the Canadian game are a yard apart rather than on the tips of the ball. How do you think that would affect play?
Hey, you know, the difference is, hey, NFL, we're like this, right?
Right.
Right here, you're going inside, well, you're going to get it.
Right.
You're going
right.
outside, I'm going with you, right?
Right.
Okay. But in ball, now I got to square up. I got to square up and look at you, right? And when you start to make a move, then I'm going to turn my hips, all right? You're going to go, I'm going to go. Go, 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 go.
Here you go.
Ooh. Get out of there. Get out of there.
You got it.
That's football, Canadian style.
Did you know in Canada we have no fair catch rule?
No fair catch?
No fair catch.
Holy mackerel.
You know, hopefully there's aspirin on the side with the medics.
Somebody's going to get hurt.
<I'll> be No fair catch? Injuries?
I see some pain.
That could be kind of dangerous. I believe somebody would get killed like that.
You guys like it violent up there, huh?
CFL. We play by our own rules. The lines of scrimmage in the Canadian game are a yard apart rather than...
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Candid Frank. That's David Morisuti. And joining us, not in the studio, but outside the studio, is Joe Pesich. And they'll be doing NFL Blitz coming up next after this program. They'll be starting about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we hope you'll enjoy that. It'll be a lot of fun. And I guess Victoria is going to be on with them as well. So, and we'll see if Mr. Eric Conan is going to be there too. We'll take a look. And I hope you watch it. So, the Western Division. The Western Division has been for years. You know, the Eastern Division, for those of us that follow the Eastern Division closely, we've been the joke of the CFL. The Western Division makes fun of us, kicks sand in our face. But we did win the Ottawa and Argo Grey Cups, you know. So as far as not being so good, I'm not so sure. But that's just an opinion from my perspective. But the truth is, the Western teams during the regular season have kicked ass. But this year, not only are they kicking ass, but so are the Eastern teams. And in the West, as much as we're talking about how well the East is doing, the West has been the most combative season they've had in years. Would you agree, Jared, in your definition of that and description?
I don't think there's a better way to put it, to be honest. I mean, you've got four teams with at least six wins. The fourth place team has 12 points, and there's 2 to 4 points separating, or 4 to 0 points separating these teams. I mean, 4 points between Winnipeg, Calgary. Calgary, Saskatchewan are tied, and Edmonton's 2 points back of them. So, I mean, this is basically an all-out dogfight for who's going to get home advantage, who's going to get the bye, and who's going to cross over. And it's just awesome.
Yeah, I think that's what makes the CFL, the West, keep the regular season somewhat interesting. Because you hear it all the time that it means nothing until the playoffs, but this year, I feel like, you know, because Calgary isn't as dominant as they've been, it's kind of allowed Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, Edmonton to kind of at least realize there's a chance here that we can not only, and Jared put it up, get home advantage, but even get the bye. Something that Calgary has had almost every year. Like, that's a big change this year, and
I think it's their rite of passage, Calgary first.
Yep. And I mean, I'm still giving them the best chance to get that bye, even though they're they're 4 points out.
There is good news here for the rest of the teams. There is good news, and we all agree that a Bo Levi-less team is nowhere as good as a Bo Levi included team, right? But I'm going to say this: the biggest problem Calgary has had over the years, I'm not going to call it overconfidence. I'll call it a little bit of overconfidence. But what I'm going to say is the opposition has a large hill to climb over, and they're focused. The Argos won the Grey Cup because they were focused at the right time. Ottawa won the Grey Cup because they were focused at the right time, and neither of them had a right to win that trophy. Jared?
For sure, and I would almost argue that, like, Bo Levi doesn't choke necessarily, but I think when in those two games specifically, because both of them they were both really close games.
Absolutely.
And I would say that Bo, he tries
too hard to make the perfect play when all you need is a bit more yards to get closer downfield, right? I mean, the biggest example of that is in Ottawa when the Argos won, was that big throw downfield when all he needed to do was get a little closer.
He had another play he could make.
Exactly, right? But he forced the throw to the end zone into double coverage and it was picked off. And
that's his thing, though. He's very aggressive. That's the thing, though, Jerry.
Yeah.
That's what makes him, though, doesn't it? It's kind of hard. And
exactly.
It's
like a make or break thing, right? It makes him for so much of the season, but then at certain points, it, for whatever reason, it just breaks. And that's not a discredit to Bo. I think that's just how most athletes work, is that they're so aggressive sometimes, and it just is too much in one particular situation, and then that's the way it goes.
And let's also
Calgary is Calgary with Bo.
And let's look at the two quarterbacks he lost to. Ricky Ray, who's arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks in CFL history, at least up there, and Henry Burris, who
on one leg,
but again has not only the experience but just the mindset of knowing what to do. Didn't have to do too much, didn't force anything, and I think that's what made last year and very impressive for Bo, in that, you know, sure, did he have aggressive throws? Did he have aggressive plays? Yes. But he was also smarter about it, too. And his team limited the mistakes. There were mistakes that you do not see Calgary make, that they made in the Grey Cup against the Argos, the fumble that was returned. I know that the weather was a bit of an issue, too. And then against Ottawa,
yeah. Running that end around by the quarterback that didn't work.
No. So I think that Calgary organization really realized that they didn't lose more than they beat themselves.
But and before the people I'm associated with, the Argos, including the fans,
we're not taking anything away from the Argos win.
When I said they didn't deserve to win, I meant it. I'm not going to shirk responsibility for saying it. But when I say they didn't deserve it, when they arrived on that field and they walked onto that field, they didn't have as much right to be there as Calgary. The thing is, though, and this is why Calgary lost, this is why Ottawa and Toronto won, they lived the moment. They did what they needed to do when they did it. And I agree with you guys. As far as Ricky Ray, and Henry Burris, two very experienced quarterbacks. Last year, he was up against Trevor Harris. Harris, who doesn't have... He has the talent, he has the ability, the same stuff he has this year and the same problems he had this year, he had even then, right?
Yeah.
He just needs to establish himself. Harris hasn't hit his peak yet. He hasn't learned that lesson or shown that he's learned that lesson to get him just over that top. He's on the brim, right? And that's the reason why Calgary won as well. They had a team that was hungry to beat them, but they didn't have the same kind of leadership that the other two teams mm-hmm. had, and instead we have a Bo Levi Mitchell who learned from those two experiences
exactly.
Now playing last year. So when I say these teams didn't deserve to win the Grey Cup, outside of the fan bases, nobody believed either of these two teams could win.
Yeah.
Well, they were the underdog.
They were totally the underdogs. It's not. It wasn't even close.
And both those quarterbacks, Ricky Ray and Henry Burris, also lost in Grey Cups.
Right.
So they learned from those lessons in the same way, as you said, Bo did as well.
Yeah, there's lessons to be learned. Disappointment always exists. What you do with disappointment, is something that defines you. And that's what defines greatness. And there's no doubt that Bo Levi Mitchell is great. In the Western Division, it sounds to me like the three of us agree that Calgary's the team to beat in the West.
I would say so. I mean, Winnipeg has been good, but they've also had losses that make me really question if they're ready to contend right now.
Big picture, Bo Levi Mitchell in. He looks like he's healthy. Are they the team? Are they the team to beat in the West, in your opinion, Jared Babte?
I think so. It, It is tough to argue David's point where, you know, Winnipeg has had a couple of losses where you're like, ooh, you know, maybe you should have had that one. But I wouldn't count out Winnipeg,
no,
for sure.
No, nobody's going to do that.
This is, exactly. And I think that this the battle for the bye is going to come down to the wire between arguably the three teams up
Absolutely.
There. I think Saskatchewan's going to be real close, too. And, but yeah, it's tough to argue against Bo Levi Mitchell's Calgary Stampeders.
And the old adage, in boxing, you got to beat the champ. Right? You got to beat
the champ. Exactly.
At the end of the day, it comes down to that. Somebody's got to beat Calgary and take them out.
And let's not forget who Winnipeg plays in the last two games, and that's
really?
Calgary, there home and home. That the CFL, at least they did that right with the schedule.
Oh, my goodness. The schedule, you've got Edmonton playing the last six games against teams that are contenders in the East and in the West.
Yeah.
Well, and this is what I've been saying for multiple weeks now, is that I think Edmonton's really going to start to fall off at this point.
I could really set the Esky fans on fire right now. You know, they're not with Harris going down and being having covered the Argos and watched Logan Kilgore's quarterbacking skills kind of fall apart. It's not to suggest that that's going to happen, but at the end of all this, we only can rely on what we know, and what we know is what we've seen. Now we saw 9 straight passes. You know, successful and all that, but if Edmonton becomes a train wreck, which they're set up to be, that, you know, they could be, God willing, on their behalf, that Logan Kilgore does what we talked about earlier. He's able to get that team at a 500 level at least. If he gets them at a 500 level, they have a playoff spot. Because I'm not sure. I know this sounds kind of as a guy covering the Argos and who wants the Argos to be relevant, but I don't think the Argos are dead yet because math just says they're not, right? And if they can play the way they played the past few weeks, and it's too bad for them because, you know, the crossover would not be as attainable as it is right now if it wasn't for the way the Argos played the past few weeks and got a little unfortunate. So Edmonton right now, they're in the driver's seat to make the playoffs. But Who's gonna be handling the steering wheel?
The Argos should have 6 wins right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, but we'll go with them at the East.
Yeah.
We'll bring that up in the East. So Edmonton, do we agree that Edmonton better straighten out, because the worst case scenario for them could be they don't make the playoffs?
They've had two games recently where they've been outscored 58-26. Now they have a bye week, and then they come back against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, who will have just played Calgary, so maybe the Ticats will be a little beaten up. But still, I would argue that the Ticats are a better team. Then they play, you know, they've got a game against Ottawa and then a game against BC, but they play Hamilton twice. Then they have another bye week. Then they play Saskatchewan back-to-back to finish the season.
Right.
I mean, okay, you maybe get... If you get only 2 wins out of that, and the Argos start to build on this momentum, because you look at the Argonauts schedule, who they're closing out with. Okay, the Argos have a bye week as well.
This week,
but like the Argos could be nipping at their heels, and I'll save that for our Eastern Conference discussion.
Yeah, and the tiebreaker doesn't count
be
the
tight.
Crossover. That's the other thing to bear in mind.
I was about to ask about that.
The tiebreaker doesn't count in the crossover.
And we know how Edmonton feels about the crossover.
Well, we know how BC feels about the crossover. We know how every team in the West that came over here, all but once was a good visit.
Yeah, we also know how Jason Moss feels about it, how the playoff is. And anything that gets Jason Moss unhappy makes me a little happy, too.
So, in the Western Division, do we throw the towel in for the BC Lions? Is it over for them? Is the young coach, the new young coaches under him, the offensive line, all that stuff? Is this who they're going to be, or are we going to see what we saw a flash of in the last game where they looked good but just couldn't beat Montreal?
I'm looking for a white flag right now for BC.
How about you, Jerry?
But yeah.
Yeah. I think they're going to get beaten up a little bit more before this season's done, and I'll be impressed with Mike Riley's physical stamina and ability if he finishes the season healthy.
Unbelievable. The last quarterback standing.
Oh, yeah.
The last quarterback standing. Who would have thought that? Amazing. And so
he hasn't been standing very much this season either.
He's been limping too. He's been limping too. So we all agree that Edmonton is in a precarious position, because of their quarterback, and because even before their quarterback went down, their play was questionable. So that leaves us with the other three. Can we agree that any of those three can finish first, and any of those three can finish third?
Yep. No, I agree. Saskatchewan, I think their play at home makes me suggest that they really could use that bye or the home or second spot, because I think if they get third, I think they're in trouble. I'm not as convinced with them on the road as I am with them at home, and that's a lot of things with the West teams. They're so much better at home than they are away. But Saskatchewan can sneak up on you. Their offense is a lot better this year than I was expecting. Their defense still has the playmakers, but I just want to know, when the pressure is on them and they're not
like
in
it was this week.
Yeah.
It was on them this week. They had a chance to put their foot on the throat of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers a little bit.
And not being at home, I think that was the big that took away their biggest advantage, because their biggest advantage is being at home.
I guess they have to get a couple extra necklaces. How about you, Jared? Anybody first, anybody third in the Western Division of those three?
I think Winnipeg closes it out just because they're on a roll and they've been doing so well. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. In Saskatchewan, struggling on the road, they're now 2-3 this season being on the road. But they're the second best team at home. Winnipeg is a perfect 6-0 still at home. So that's why I think Winnipeg will be able to close it out, because of their home record. But, I honestly think it's going to finish the way it is right now. Winnipeg, Calgary, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance of that.
Yeah, there's a very good chance of that. Saskatchewan has to figure out how to play well on the road. I agree with you 100%, David. Sorry, didn't mean to point. So basically, the Western Division... Great to be a Western Division football fan right now. And by that I mean you're on pins and needles, and there's that saying that when you go to a game, it's nice to pay for the whole seat, but it's awesome when you only get to use the edge. And I think that's the definition of what it's like to be a Western Division fan right now. On in the case of all the teams, albeit except BC probably, unless they go a run too. They've done it before. We're not talking about a team who hasn't won 7 in a row towards the end of the season, and we're not talking about a team who didn't win the Grey Cup, 8-10.
Yeah, but just the way that the West is and how many issues BC has, it's just so tough. Like, that's just a total 180 you have to make.
I tried, BC fans. I tried to give you hope. I tried.
Hey, we've seen crazier things happen, but if BC fans, I want to give you hope, but there's just too much too many good teams in the West that it just makes it too hard. And your quarterback, you should be worried more about your quarterback staying healthy than a playoff spot right now.
Jared, what I think is basically that team committed to losing this year. And when I say committed to losing, they committed to a new coach. They committed to a whole bunch of guys that have no experience coaching. And I don't know how they could have expected to have a successful year starting there. And so no one in BC should be surprised that they're having this kind of season, because the first thing people would have said, if they would have had a good year, not a great year, they would have had a good year, man, and they're doing it with a rookie coach, and look at all these coaches here that have no experience are doing it with that. What do you think, Jared?
Well,
Well, I would argue that...
Go ahead.
I would actually argue the opposite. I think that BC fans were expecting to have at least a decent season because of Mike Riley. You know, you bring in this stalwart, staple quarterback in the CFL and go 1-9 in the first half of the year. I understand all the other outside factors, but I mean, it was celebrated that Mike Riley was coming back to BC, and it's going to be a great year now that he's back in BC, and you know, now they've got 100%. A quarterback again. And
you are so right. You're so right, and you know the saying about a rule is a rule except for the exception, and the exception makes the rule.
Exactly.
Mike Riley is the exception to the rule that if you get a great quarterback, you're going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how many teams have gone quarterbacks that you think that can take them, but then the supporting cast, they're like, oh, Mike Riley can carry them.
Right. Didn't do it with Edmonton.
No,
Let's not forget, this is not a one-off for Mike Riley. Mike Riley was in Edmonton and didn't make the playoffs there as well. A lot closer, but didn't make the playoffs. So we'll leave it there. We'll move on for another break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the Eastern Division of the Canadian Football League. He's David. Jared's on the phone. Bernardo's flipping the switches. And I'm Candid Frank, and you're watching CFL Talk. It's Candid, it's Frank, and of course, as always, live.
As diverse as a country, a league of Jacksons and Kwongs, Eliminians and Messams, Moscas, Custises, Sinopolis, Chigares and Burrises, a league of Reeds, Rices, O'Shays and Owusuwansas, a league where what makes each of us different makes all of us stronger.
What do you know? We're doing our show. Where did you go? You went to a break. And did you enjoy the break? We enjoyed the break. We had a real intense conversation about football and where it's going next. So where it's going next on the show is the East. Jared, Ticat coverage. Ticat, she's season ticket holder. How about those Ticats?
They're still rolling. You know, I think most of Hamilton got pretty nervous when Masoli tore his ACL and it's done for the year. I think most of Hamilton kind of went, oh, well, that's it again. Because,
<Okay.
laughs> I mean, they've been through it. Hamilton's been through it before with Caleros at least once. And then they went, oh, who's this Masoli character? And he carried them to the East Final. And they went, hey, he's not bad. And now he's down, and they went, oh, who's this Dane Evans character? And now they're all going, oh, hey, he's not bad.
Is he good enough to end the century-long drought?
That's the difficult question. Is Hamilton still capable of winning a Grey Cup? I think the supporting cast around Dane Evans is good enough. I think they've always been good enough, and now they've just added Terrell Sutton to their practice roster because they've had so many running back injuries as well. Another ex-Argo, and another guy that, you know, a veteran leader presence that is, I guess, brought in to continue to try and mentor the running back core that has now grown to like 8 apparently, because so many of them are hurt in Hamilton.
Absolutely.
But I don't necessarily think Hamilton is a lock for the
for the Eastern bye at the moment, just because of how well Montreal has been playing. They really need to keep an eye out for Montreal. Montreal also has a game in hand, so they've got a lot going for them right now. But Hamilton has outscored Montreal by almost 100 points this season, and I mean total points for, not in games against each other. You know, 336 to 253, so we're looking at like 75 points on offense. And as we mentioned earlier, Dane Evans, I think, is finally getting more comfortable in the pocket. Once he steps into the pocket to throw, he's making the throws a lot more often instead of when he falls out of the pocket and rolls and he's not able to get a good throw off. And now bringing in the support of Terrell Sutton for a running game again, I think things are going to continue to fall into place for Hamilton, but like I said, they still got to be worried about Montreal.
So either someone was trying to call us because we pissed them off so much, or we were getting a crank
either an
call.
Edmonton fan or a Hamilton fan.
Or a BC fan.
And you know, you see the shocked expression on everybody's phone call? We got a phone call? We got our first phone call, and we rejected them. How terrible of us.
Well,
yeah, sorry about that.
We don't know who it was. I wish we could have seen what was on the monitor.
Yeah, we'll worry about that. Might have even actually been Mike. Mike might have actually called, because I did give him the number here. Yeah, as far as Hamilton is concerned, I think what goes for with every team that's successful and or trying to keep the process going, in their case, the process has been given a little whack with losing Mazzoli. You know, every team has to deal with their own processes because of whatever, outside influences, outside situations, whether it be injuries to running backs, as you mentioned. Hamilton needs to maintain the process of playing well, but I think, you know, one of the challenges, David, that Hamilton has is to maintain that level of I don't want to say aggression, but that passion and aggression. Can they carry that out? You know, what happens with some teams that are that passionate when they play, they run out of gas. You know, can they maintain the emotional level that they seem to be at and be able to run it into the playoffs and through the playoffs to a Grey Cup?
That is the tough part. But I think they got guys that have done it before on that roster. We talk about Chris Manziel.
Recently.
We talk about Dylan Wynn. We talk like guys like that who
Tuggle.
Have won. Tuggle, guys who have won and have been key parts of those teams too, of those winning teams, especially in Toronto. I think that will help. I think Chris Manziel, when we saw the news and Argos fans saw the news, I couldn't tell you how many Argos fans reached out to me and were like, we cannot believe this. You know, they were really upset because they know how important Manziel was, not just on the field, but off the field too.
Totally.
And having Hamilton knew that. That's why they pounced quickly on it. But that's the thing that they'll have to watch. Dane Evans right now has done enough to win. He made the really good adjustments in the Labor Day game, where he realized the pressure was getting to him. So what does he do? He gives it to his playmakers and let them roll with it. You know, Brandon Banks, Braylon Addison both torched the Argos on plays that didn't look harmless, and then it was just like, oh, you know, a 5-yard dump turned into a 30-40-yard gain. That's what happened to the Argos. The Argos could not stop those plays.
But also the fact that Cleon Lang was his first game back, and and you know, that first half he was awesome, and I think he was tired the second half, not because he wasn't ready.
No.
But because after coming off such a long layoff,
the adrenaline wore off.
He was going on adrenaline in the first half, and then adrenaline isn't enough.
No. But also, the Argos offense could not stay on the field again.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And unfortunately, they were on the field long enough to make, you know, stats look good. But again, we talk about this endlessly with everybody, all the teams. You know, it's about red zone or green zone. I used to call it always red zone. Now they're calling it green zone too. So I'll call it green zone too. Where they got to get into the end zone when they get that close, and they're not doing it. And that's something that if you don't do it, you don't win. It's that simple.
And also, when Hamilton got lucky in that game because of how many turnovers they had, I mean, that's the part of the game they need to clean up is the turnovers, because the Argos had, I think, what, 4 or 5 turnovers, and they didn't capitalize on it. Hamilton against Ottawa in the East Final, I believe, they had quite a few turnovers that bit them. But also because Trevor Harris bit them really hard with that. So that's something I think Hamilton needs to worry about more, is their offense needs to play mistake-free, because their defense is good enough to win a Grey Cup. It's the offense needs to, A, not get frustrated, because we've seen when Brandon Brinks is frustrated, his play drops off. And if they're throwing interceptions or they're fumbling the ball, that's going to be very costly, especially in the playoffs.
And the playoffs mean Montreal Alouettes, depending on if there's a crossover. And as history has shown us, that usually the Eastern Division team, that's the home team, has a good leg up on beating the Western team. So we don't know who will be there in that third spot. We talked about long shot Toronto Argonauts. Ottawa just doesn't, like,
no.
Ottawa and Toronto is on the way up, and Ottawa is really falling. And I this isn't because I cover the Argos, but I feel saddened for the Ottawa fans. And Ottawa fans, you're just getting a bit of what everybody else has had to put up with. Ottawa fans are so lucky. Imagine, in their first year, they were awful. They were like 1-17, I think they were the first year. Then they went to the Grey Cup. Then they won the Grey Cup. Then they're finishing in first. This is the first year where they're actually acting like a second-year expansion team.
Not only that, they went to the season with a hope and prayer quarterback. Jonathan Jennings has had a history as a starter, but not a great history. Dominic Davis, like, nobody really knew who he was as a proven product. Their defense in that game to start off was not too bad, but eventually your defense sort of gives in when your offense is that bad and turning over the ball as much. There were so many plays that the Argos made where I'm just like, where is the defense? And I'm sure Ottawa fans felt the same way, but at least there is something to build off. They have some pieces, but they have a lot of work to do there.
I scratched my head when, and I'm doing it now, because now moving over to the Montreal Alouettes, who apparently were doing some funky business with the cap and stuff, and they end up bringing in Chris Williams, Chris Matthews, and you know that receiving core that Vernon Adams is throwing to, it is probably one of the best in the league.
It was one of the worst last year, and it's one of the, I wouldn't say one of the best, it's at least closer to Hamilton. Although Toronto's receiving core is pretty good too. I just think it's better, they have more guys that can match the playmaking ability that Vernon Adams has. Last year they didn't have it, they have it this year. I think that's the big thing, Montreal's getting plays. They didn't look great against BC, and they didn't look great against Toronto. They just made enough plays, and that's, I think, what's made Montreal better this year, is they're making plays. And again, when you're making plays and you're getting the results, you're going to get the wins. And that's what's been the issue for a team like Toronto and BC and Ottawa. They're not making enough plays to win. They might have good stats. They might be able to go into close games. But if you're not making plays, like Hamilton's making, like Montreal's making, you're going to be in a tough position.
Best hit of the year, Poseco Locombo, Von Miller.
There's certain hits when you see them and you feel hurt. Like it hurts you. I think that's definitely one of them.
That had to be one of the cleanest, hardest hits that I've seen in a very, very, very long time. Mm-hmm. Montreal, Jared.
I heard the impact from Hamilton.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Like in the air. I felt a disturbance.
Yeah, they said a bit of an earthquake took place. An amazing situation, to say the least. So I guess we can leave it there, and we'll save some more conversations for next week. We have a whole whack of announcements that Joe Pesich will be sharing with us. We're going to go through some time changes. But to complete the show, we're going to do our predictions. And so there we are. We've got three games this week. We've got Ottawa at BC. Jared.
I give it to BC just because they're at home, and as we've said, Ottawa is definitely on a down. And I think, you know, like we were saying, I think BC, yes, you know, we said Montreal didn't look too great against BC, and BC really actually took that game down to the wire against Montreal. So I think BC's on a little bit of an up, and that's why I give it to BC, because, I mean, Ottawa's basically just in turmoil right now. And I think they are, unfortunately, even though they have a few wins, they are the worst team in the league right now.
David? What I'll say is I think it'll be a close game, because I think Jonathan Jennings, if he does start, will try to prove something in BC, but I still think BC has the better, more talented roster, and I think they'll see blood.
And they've shown more.
Yeah.
Over the past few weeks,
like
they've shown
more. It's just like a shark seeing blood in the water. They're going to pounce on it.
Make it a three-way, BC. Hamilton-Calgary, the game to watch. This one here, I'll start just by saying that you've got a Bo Levi Mitchell team playing a team that they'll need to beat if they want to carry that mug again.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very likely at this point in the season, a likely combination for the Grey Cup. It's going to be one that I think Hamilton's going to win. I think Calgary over the past few years has had trouble with Hamilton. Now, I'm giving Dane Evans a lot of credit here.
Yes. I think Calgary being at home makes a big difference. Hamilton has struggled in Calgary as well in the past. I've seen pretty bad blowouts. Like we talk about the Toronto-Hamilton blowout, people forget about the Hamilton blowout game blown out in Calgary.
Yeah.
I just think also Calgary's defense is going to give Dane Evans a really hard time, especially their cornerbacks are going to pick apart any mistake he makes. And Bo Levi Mitchell, I can't count against him right now, especially going up against Dane Evans. This will be a close one, though, and I think Calgary in a close game has enough to win it.
I just want to make sure that the Hamilton fans don't confuse me with Frankie Z. What do you think,
Jared?
This is the real test for Hamilton, because this is the team that they need to beat right now. They know they can beat Winnipeg because they have. They know they can beat Saskatchewan because they have. But and I mean they have with Dane Evans. But they need to beat Calgary under the arm of Dane Evans. And I think it's possible because Bo had a bit of a rough game in Edmonton this past weekend. He still got the win, but I mean, he threw three interceptions. That's very much un-Bo-like for him to throw three interceptions and only go 25 for 40.
Okay, let's speed it up. Yeah, Montreal and Saskatchewan. I don't mean to. Let's leave it there. Montreal, Saskatchewan, David. This is another possible Grey Cup matchup.
Yes, I think Saskatchewan has the edge at home again, but I think Montreal is going to surprise in this game, and I think I think this is a game that they can show that they're a legit contender. So I'm going to go with Montreal in this one.
I'm going to go with the Riders. The reason I'm going to go with the Riders is that Vernon Adams has had a lot of great games, but he's been good, and then had a. This might be the one where he doesn't look so good, and I think he's going to have trouble with the DBs in Saskatchewan. They're very athletic, and they're very good, and I think they might victimize Adams a little bit. What do you think, Jared?
I think Fajardo is just the better quarterback in general, and it's very difficult to win in Saskatchewan, especially when you're a team like Montreal where you're on again, off again. So I got to go with Saskatchewan at New Mosaic.
All right, well, I will enjoy when I prove you both wrong.
Oh, really?
Actually, Montreal's going to have to prove me right on
that. Oh, really? Well, okay, closing comments. I apologize for the slow start today. I was dealing with some really sad and bad news. Nothing tragic or anything like that, but it was very disconcerting, and I apologize for the slow start to Bernardo and to you guys. You deserve better. But what I will say is this, and I will correlate it with being a CFL fan. We must learn to deal with disappointment. When disappointment arrives, it's an opportunity to appreciate when you're not disappointed and never give up. That's what we do. And for those of you in Ottawa, in Toronto, and BC, hope is on the way. It just may not be this year, and it may not be tomorrow. So always keep your head up. Enjoy the games for what they are. Well, that's one thing we learned from the Labor Day Classic. I'm Candid Frank. That's David Morisuti on the phone. Jared Bapti, you've been watching Candid Frank Live, CFL Talk, Barn Burner Network. Glad you could join us. Check us out on our site. Check out our app. And Bernardo, if you don't mind, play two bumpers and the close, if you don't mind, to give the guys time to set up in here. Ciao. See you later.
We are a league as diverse as a country. A league of Jacksons and Kwongs, Elamimians and Messams, Moscas, Custises,
From the CabeWinnerRadio.tv studios in North York, Ontario, and over the Barn Burner Network, you are listening and watching Candid Frank Live, seen on Mondays at 1 and 3 p.m. respectively, wrapped around our NFL Blitz show. Don't forget the Barn Burner app on iOS or Android. So join us for Monday Night Football on the Barn Burner Network, Candid Frank and Live.